Hey everyone, and welcome back to Scorncast, the official podcast of the Pop Scorn movie blog, which can be found at scornpop.blogspot.com. This is your ableist host, Jasper. Ghostface Millet is here, breathing through his nose as usual. And on this episode, we'll be discussing the new action comedy, Abduction, starring Taylor Lautner as a troubled teen whose world is as rocked as his body when he learns his parents, Jason Isaacs and Maria Bello, are actually CIA agents protecting him from sundry European bad guys who've been waiting 15 years to kidnap him so they can blackmail his biological father into handing over sensitive government information or something I don't really care about.
Who are you, really?
I'm one of your keepers, Nathan. I'm put in place to look after you. It's the arrangement I made with your father in case something like this ever happened.
This is crazy! Call the police or something!
I already tried.
She has heard too much already.
What?
Are you serious?
As soon as you can, dump those clothes.
Don't lose that kid!
Now, in less than 20 seconds, we're going to hit a soft curve before the bridge. I'm going to slow down just enough for you to jump out.
Jump?
It's 30 feet down to the river.
Wait a minute, this is insane.
15 seconds. And remember, from now on, do not trust anybody.
I need answers.
You've been looking for answers your whole life. You just didn't know what questions to ask. Now, you have 10 seconds to open that door.
Handle this.
5 seconds. Leave the girl. You're better off alone.
Well, where am I supposed to go?
Take a breath.
Jump!
It's gonna be okay.
Now!
So, Ghostface, not to set the bar too high at the front of the episode, but this is already my favorite episode of Scorncast, and we're only about 10 seconds into recording it.
Yeah, I think it's good so far because we agreed to see this movie and talk about it.
So did we win or lose?
I mean, we are the losers. Let's be honest. But the listeners are going to win.
So I know you usually talk about men in the beginnings of these things.
Right.
But I wondered if I could talk about men for
yeah,
a change.
Go for it. Let's change roles for a second.
Okay. Now you be very uncomfortable with human sexuality. I would like to talk about Taylor Lautner.
Let's do it.
Okay. I'm confused, and not in the way that you might think that I'm confused.
I was going to say, it's okay, he's legal.
No, nothing like that. I don't get it, because you have an actor, am I using finger quotes, maybe?
I heard the finger quotes.
Yeah. You have an actor whose best asset is the fact that he has pretty great abs. And this movie seems to go out of its way to hide those abs, correct?
I made note of that. You know, like, that's a negative. And it started off in a place where you thought it was going to be, like, pretty, you know, at liberty with him being shirtless or, like, whatever. That there was going to be some fight scenes where his shirt was going to get ripped or something. Like,
yeah.
I thought that that was this kind of movie. And, like, that's not the reason I saw it. The reason I saw it is because it looked awful. But it also, like, I thought, well, at least that'll be its saving grace. He's, like, on the hood of a car, I think, in the very beginning. And they're, like, driving, well, it says they're driving 75 miles an hour, but then they show them and they're going like 15, but like he's driving and his shirt keeps like blowing up, you know, and like it's like showing you his like mid drift or whatever, and I was like, oh, it's like totally gonna be like that. But like, that was a lot compared to the rest of the film.
Those bottom several buttons of his flannel were like purposefully left unbuttoned. Here's the thing, at least the Twilight movies, despite that they're huge piles of crap, at least they know that the key to Taylor Lautner's success is his abs, and they, you know, use him for that as much as possible. I'm not saying that I enjoy that at all. I actually don't get Taylor Lautner. I'm going to be chased down by a bunch of tween girls in the mall now if we have any tween girl Scorncast fans. We should look into why we have tween girl Scorncast fans. But yeah, I don't get it. I don't understand why this movie seems so skittish about using the thing that it exists for.
The Twilight movies know what eye candy is, and they know, like, how to utilize that eye candy. Because, like, there really isn't a lot else there. You know, like, especially for this movie, like, the writing and his acting, like, that combination is, like, he should have been shirtless in every scene. And there was parts when I was kind of like, oh, like, this is where they're going to do it. Like, they're going to have a sexy scene or whatever, you know, with, like, him and this girl. And it just, like, everything just kind of fizzled or just ended. And I didn't know that this was directed by John Singleton. So when that flashed up on the screen, I was like, wow, I'm disappointed in you.
Yeah, it's been 20 years since Boys in the Hood, and I keep having to remind myself that there's been a lot of stuff in the media in there that is questionable. He did direct Too Fast, Too Furious.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't really done, you know, a whole lot of movies, but I think the ones that he has done that are the most interesting are more, like, racially related, and this movie, like, doesn't have any of that. This movie doesn't really have any substance at all, which I think it wasn't even aware of its lack of substance. Like, it didn't use what it had to make up for that.
Yeah, this is essentially just the most useless movie, maybe of the year. It's like Wet Fart, the movie.
Yeah, like, I specifically remember sitting in there and thinking, man, this is a lot like I Am Number 4, but I Am Number 4 had pretty decent special effects. Like, they weren't great, but they were okay. And it did have Alex Pettifer, and he was, like, half-naked several times.
Here we go.
You know? They knew what they had.
Okay, and yeah, no, yeah, that's very true. And it had a budget.
Which this movie, I guess, did not.
I'm torn. I Am Number 4 is for sure the worst thing I've seen so far this year, up until Abduction.
That's
which
the thing.
Either
yeah,
ties it or is worse. I'm not sure yet. I'm going to have to think about that one.
Right.
Are you familiar with the band Stellastar?
Yes.
Would you like to know a fun fact about Abduction?
Yes.
Abduction was written by Stellastar's lead singer.
Wow, that's awful.
Isn't that the weirdest awful thing you've heard all day?
Can I tell you that when the movie started, I saw written by Sean Christensen, and I said, ah, that's a name I'll never forget, because he will be responsible for this. And, like, I said that jokingly, like, thinking it was going to be bad, and then, like, when I heard several lines of dialogue spoken, I was like, wow, Sean Christensen. And then it just became this running joke of, like, how awful this person is, and how, like, just many holes exist in this film. It's, like, ridiculous. But you know what? Like, I remember that band. I had, like, their first album, and it was good the first time. Like, I listened to it. It was fun and poppy. And then, like, the more that I listened to it, the more that I was like, man, these lyrics are awful. And so, basically, this movie is, like, a really long Stellastar song.
I want to know where these high school parties are that I missed out on as a kid. They look like Noxzema commercials.
They do. And, like, everyone is, like, having a really good time. And, you know, there's, like, a really nice pool. I never heard about that.
There's a lot of Taylor Lautner in the early part of this movie where he's at one of these parties and drinking with his friends and just having a really excellent time. He's smiling and he's squinting a lot. It's so labored looking, and all I could think was that he based his performance on Tom Cruise on that episode of Oprah where he jumped up and down on the couch.
I mean, he's very obviously overselling it to the point where it's, like, so blatant that it's just not believable. Like, he's a mouth breather. So, like, the whole movie, he's, like, trying to make scenes seem more intense by breathing through his mouth. He like, clenches his jaw and does, like, this weird, like, I'm acting face a lot. And that was kind of one of the good things about the beginning of the movie is that, like, it's not that heavy yet. So you don't get that from him. But you still get him, like, trying really hard to, like, show that he's having a good time. And that he's, like, a carefree teen. But then, like, that's not even actually what his character is. You find out later that he's, like, troubled.
Yeah, in the weirdest way, he's been to juvenile court, apparently.
Right, for, like, anger and, like, rage issues or something.
Yeah, so his parents, Maria Bello and Jason Isaacs, are actually, like, CIA handlers who are looking after him, keeping him safe because his father is away, like, ambiguously, like, on assignments, even though he's still sort of around and they just never have met.
Yeah.
And his mother is dead, and he keeps on having these dreams about his mother's murder, but he doesn't really know that they're dreams about his mother's murder because, like, he's unaware that he is living with CIA handlers. He thinks that Maria Bello and Jason Isaacs are his legitimate biological parents. And Sigourney Weaver is his therapist, who has the strangest advice when he's telling her about these dreams that he has. He's explaining to her about, you know, how violent they are and how he's seeing this woman get shot in front of him. And her advice to him is just forget about it. It's yeah, probably nothing. And obviously, we find things out about Sigourney Weaver later on in the movie. But my question to ask you was, is she a legitimate therapist? Like, I know she's undercover, or maybe she's just, like, she's left the CIA and she now works as a therapist. But, I mean, is she taking other patients? Is she just seeing him, like, weekly to try to convince him to forget about these things that he thinks that he is remembering?
No, I like to believe that she's a real therapist and that she's actually not qualified at all, but she really needs to keep this ruse up, you know? So she is just, she's seeing lots of troubled teens and telling them to forget about the things that they see and just have a good time, you know, relax and let loose. I didn't get her in the whole thing, and I think the whole way that he like finds out that his life is not his life is like such
bullshit.
It's such a boring thing to watch unfold. Okay, this is my favorite part. He's doing a sociology project with the girl of his dreams, right? This beautiful long-haired Karen who goes to school with him and lives across the street from him, right? So they have history or something. Their project is on something. It doesn't even matter.
It's very, very vaguely defined as a sociology project.
They look on a missing children's website and they're like picking these kids and they're making fun of missing children by saying like which celebrities they look like.
They're like, yeah, she looks like Dave Foley crossed with Lady Gaga. It's really weird.
You know, it's like, oh wow, that's so good and relevant, you know? And then one of them is like, oh my gosh, he looks like this guy plus you. And then it's like, dun, 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 you know, or whatever. And then so he, like, looks into this picture and, like, prints this shit out on his computer and goes back over to her house to, like, talk about it some more. And his parents are like, hey, what do you got there? Like, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, I'm doing a project. It's on websites. Like, your parents are really going to believe that you're doing a project just on websites? Like, can't this writer of this film think of a better excuse for this character to have?
Hey, he was on tour, okay?
Yeah, exactly. He was really busy recording that new album. No, but like, seriously, that's how he discovered that he was not who he thought he was.
And it's even stupider because we find out very quickly that this website is set up by these vague Eastern European bad guys in order to trap him. However, they didn't know he was going to be assigned a sociology project that involved looking up missing children on a website.
Or was his sociology teacher Eastern European?
Oh, shit.
I'm pretty sure he had an accent.
Maybe this movie is a lot smarter than we're giving it credit for.
No, I think it was a mistake, but I'm just saying. I don't think there was any intention of
that. Wait, suddenly I don't feel right scorning this anymore.
Yeah, right? It's too brilliant for words. Yeah.
So, basically, these vague Eastern European bad guys come for him because they track his IP or whatever. I mean, they take control of his webcam, and they're, like, watching him as he's looking at the website.
That's something that never made sense to me. I was like, all of a sudden, they hack into your MacBook, and they can see you.
And these handlers... Obviously, his parents are teaching him how to defend himself because they feel that one day, or at least they suspect that one day, somebody evil is going to come for him. So they need to teach him how to fight. But are they really like helping this issue by living in a gigantic trillion-dollar glass mansion in the middle of suburbia?
Well, you know, they have to just keep up appearances and make it seem real. I mean, that's why Sigourney Weaver sees all those troubled teens.
Do they live in glass mansions, too?
Yeah, she has to see all of them. No, but I mean, I think that was one of the only things that actually like made sense about this movie was that his dad was training him and all that stuff. But then, like, later, when he actually fights someone, they had to friggin' remind you of all the stupid shit that his dad said to him, or, you know, his fake dad or whatever, in, like, this really dumb after-school special kind of way that, like, made it far less badass.
It's, while he's fighting a bad guy, you hear a voiceover of Jason Isaacs going, "Focus! Think about
it! Use your anger! Use your anger!" It was like, oh my god.
It reminded me of Star Wars.
I mean, it's just, like, super dated, lazy filmmaking.
So the bad guys convene on the glass house where he lives in order to abduct him. Yeah, we haven't even talked about the fact that this movie is called Abduction and there's not a single abduction in it.
No one was ever abducted.
They should have called it Threat of Abduction.
I honestly think they just wanted the word ab in the title.
Yeah, but then they even contradict
that.
There's
no abs.
There's no abs in the movie. He's only shot from shoulders up, from the back. I mean, what are you going to do? But these bad guys attack the house. They get into a fight. They murder Maria Bello, his mom. And Jason Isaacs then, like, runs in the room to fight the bad guys. He has a gun, but instead of shooting them, he leaps over the kitchen counter and decides to have a fist fight with them.
Yeah, He tries to, like, wrestle the guy to the floor with a gun in his hand.
I feel like the only way that this could have been an interesting movie with a good perspective is if they made it about the Maria Bello and Jason Isaacs characters, like two agents who have to devote their lives to protecting this tool of a kid.
Yeah, I would have watched that. It could have been funny, but then also kind of dramatic and super action-y. And also, like, they're both really capable actors. Like, the fact that they were in this movie for maybe 10 minutes. And, like, Maria Bello did her damnedest to, like, actually give this character some depth.
Yeah, but,
like,
she really did try.
She tried. She tried really hard. Like, she was not phoning this in at all. And even Jason Isaacs, too. Like, his British accent didn't slip once. Like, he tried. And I think they were probably the only two people in the whole film who actually were trying. You know, or without trying too hard and being awfully, awfully bad, like Tiller Lautner and Lily Collins. I was, like, so confused as to why they were in this movie if they somehow signed on before the script was finalized and their part got cut or, like, everything got rewritten. I don't know.
Let's talk about my favorite line in the movie.
Okay.
So after both of the parents end up dying and Taylor Lautner is trying to get out of the house with Lily Collins, and one of the bad guys who's been subdued on the floor says to Taylor Lautner, "I'm not dying here. There's a bomb in the oven." Here's a question. Who put it there? Whose bomb was it? Was it Jason Isaacs and Maria Bello's bomb? Was it the Eastern European bad guy's bomb?
It had to have been those guys' bomb.
But when
Unless
did they...
Lily Collins put it there earlier. Maybe that was her sociology experiment.
But how did he know? So they manage to get out of the house before the oven bomb makes it explode. Lily Collins sustains some injuries there. Not to her eyebrows, though, thank God.
Yes, thank God.
Can we talk about the eyebrows for just a second?
Yeah, she's really going for the Camilla Bell look. And I feel like they really wanted a Camilla Bell type actress. And they were like, oh, well, we got Taylor Lautner. We can't make him look bad.
I think my problem, I'm not saying that Lily Collins is not a pretty girl, you know.
No, she's gorgeous.
The eyebrows were very strange to me just because they were very dark and the hair was not dark. And the eyebrows were, like, really thick. It looked very Muppety to me.
Yeah, it was kind of hard to look at her, like, in super close up, because all you would see is her head framed with her, like, orangey copper hair with jet black eyebrows. So, yeah, but I mean, if you think about it, like, teenagers look like that, you know? They don't know any better.
Yeah, nobody really looked good in this movie. Everyone was shot in, like, the worst way possible.
Yeah, Sigourney Weaver had, like, 9 chins. She's, like, really skinny. I don't know why she looked like that. It's true. She had, like, 9 chins every scene in the movie. I think it was the haircut. I think my aunt has that haircut.
I don't even know where to go now.
Yeah, sorry.
It's okay. But Lily Collins sustained some injuries in the oven explosion that she might have engineered. And they wind up going to the hospital. And this is my second favorite line. Taylor Lautner calls the police. He tells them, "I just saw my parents get murdered in front of my eyes."
I mean, because, you know, it could have been in front of his face, but his eyes could have been closed. You know, I think he's just being really specific.
I think secretly you liked this movie.
I'm going to play abductions advocate throughout this whole scorn cast, because honestly, this movie is the devil. It is, like, awful, awful filmmaking. But let's talk about Alfred Molina.
Okay.
Because why was he in this movie?
Paycheck.
I know, right? Everybody paycheck. But this movie could not have paid them that well.
I don't know, unless they just thought this was kind of like a sure thing, you know? Like,
yeah,
let's just be in this movie that a bunch of people are going to see, even though a bunch of people really aren't seeing it.
Do you think that they thought this was going to be, like, the new, like, Jason Bourne, but for kids or something? Like...
It definitely ends with the threat of a sequel, because the whole relationship with Taylor Lautner and his actual birth father, played very briefly and very weirdly and very close-up of mouthly by Dermot Mulroney. I mean, I don't even know why bother having him in there at all. And the way that that whole exchange is shot at the end of the movie, where you don't really see a quality close-up of Dermot Mulroney, you see, like, a close-up of his mouth talking on the phone, they play it like it's going to be some big reveal of, like, some really famous person, and it's Dermot Mulroney.
People would not even recognize him.
He looks different than he did when he was a popular actor. I mean, I don't know if he was ever, like, really, really popular, but, you know, he was in My Best Friend's Wedding. He was in some popular movies.
To think about continuing this movie makes me laugh so much. if they gave it to some, like, no-name director and some no-name writer, they would either just, like, take a dump on it and so it would be exactly the same, or they would actually make it something better because the first one was already so bad.
Abduction 2, still not Abduction, will be the exactly. aliens of this franchise. Yeah. The Abductionist.
Well, it would probably be called The Unabduction because he would, like, find out who never abducted him to begin with. So, yeah, probably Unabduction is probably what they'll go with.
I still like Threat of Abduction because that sounds like what that movie would be called in India.
Yeah.
Or it sounds like a really bad knockoff perfume.
Is this movie an action movie? Because there was no action scenes. There was scenes that could have been really interesting. There was the one at the baseball park that had, like, some legs that they could have gone in different directions with. And it just, like, totally fizzled. It's actually, like, the end of the movie. It's, like, the big scene, right?
When you say legs, do you mean the fact that Taylor Lautner uses his legs to climb on parts of PNC Park? Or
I mean, sort of, yeah. But I mean, like, it had a lot of different directions they could go in. Cool things that they could have done with it. You know, even the direction of John Singleton being like, oh, let's shoot it this way, let's do it that way, or like the writer being like, no, we're gonna flip it, you know, and do something crazy with it. And like, instead it was just like very straightforward, like the guy pulled a gun on him, he runs after him, someone calls him and tells him to leave, and so then he leaves and then the movie's over. But like somewhere in the point in like in that, he like slides down this glass thing that was like in the trailer, but yet it was like the most boring scene ever. It was really exciting in the trailer because it was like 10 seconds of it, and this it was like 30 seconds of him like slowly sliding down this glass to then like fall on his leg and like immediately break it, and he's like limping for like a second and then he never limps again.
Jason Isaacs must have taught him parkour.
Yeah,
because he's jumping all over the structure of PNC Park like he's Prince of Persia.
Right.
Well, also, I've never seen an action movie go out of its way to sort of remove the hero from any sort of confrontation with the villain.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the thing. I was kind of like, why is he, like, running away? I don't know. And, like, that was his big grand plan. Like, there was really nothing there.
He agrees to meet with the leader of the vague Eastern European bad guys, who, by the way, is played by Michael Nyqvist, who is the Daniel Craig part in the Swedish version of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Oh, interesting.
There's all sorts of strange things going on with the writing and casting in this movie.
Yeah, seriously.
But he agrees to meet him in PNC Park, and there's a really weird section of the movie where Taylor Lautner and Lily Collins meet with one of their friends in order to obtain Pittsburgh Pirates t-shirts and hats so that they can, I guess, blend in with the people in PNC Park.
Right.
But the way that the scene is shot is so hilarious to me because as they're looking at the t-shirts and hats, Taylor Lautner says to Lily Collins, I wish there was another way. And Lily Collins says, so do I. And I was like, wait, are they not Pittsburgh Pirates fans?
Yeah, I get they really hate that team, I guess.
Maybe. But Taylor Lautner meets this lead bad guy in the park, in the stadium, as they're watching the ball game. And he's got a gun in a holster concealed under the seat that he's in. And he has this, like, meeting of the minds with the bad guy. And the bad guy is telling Taylor Lautner, like, the history of Taylor Lautner's father, like, who his father really is. And he's like, you know, he's a class 5 operative who can supersede the Geneva Convention. And then he's like, oh, and by the way, I'm the one who murdered your mother all those years ago that you dream about to this day. And I'm like, are people sitting beside them? Like, what the fuck is this conversation about?
Which that actually only makes me think that if Denzel Whitaker, their friend, Forrest Whitaker's son, might I add, if he went there earlier with a friggin' gun and taped it to the underside of this chair, like, why did no one else see this gun inside a paper cup duct taped to the underside of a seat? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Did you like the scene in the middle of the movie that took place on the train?
Yeah, because every time they had to do a cut, instead of actually cutting to, like, something that progressed the scene, they cut it to the train moving to let you know that they were still on a train. And that's supposed to be scary because trains are scary and trains move really fast and trains make noises and trains are scary.
They are racing to a destination where they might find out some more information. And it's almost sort of like a love scene that threatens to break out. And keep in mind, like, Taylor Lautner has just seen his parents, if not his real biological parents, the people who he thought were his parents, even though he got really mad at them when he found out they weren't his parents. He's just seen them, like, murdered in cold blood right in front of his face. and he's still grappling with these non-emotions that he never really displays. But for a second in this train car with Lily Collins, he's like, so why didn't you ask me out? Or maybe she says that. But it's like this really bizarre, let's make out and like touch each other moment where I was like, man, shouldn't he be like in a corner sobbing somewhere?
This is how people deal with emotions in movies, by not dealing with their emotions in movies.
You loved this movie.
No, I think it's ridiculous. I mean, yeah, out of everything, this is probably when he's, like, the most fragile and weird, and yet, like, you know, he couldn't even ask her out before. That was, like, one of the things that happened, and yet he, like, is totally self-assured and, like, picks her up and throws her against the wall and is, like, making out with her hardcore. And then she's like, well, I'm hungry. Let's go get food or whatever. Like,
oh.
It didn't make any sense, like, at all that he was doing that. And then the fact that they just ended the scene like that didn't make any sense.
My favorite part of that makeout sequence was that, like, she moves her hair out of the way so that the camera can continue to film their, like, lips and their tongues mashing together, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, she does decide to go get food because they're really starving, mm-hmm. which I think is a metaphor, because I think he means for nookie. But he decides to stay in the train car, right? And she goes to get lunch for them. And my other favorite, I know like every scene in this movie was my favorite scene, but she goes to the lunch car to pick up some lunches.
Oh, yeah.
And my favorite moment of the movie is when she has like these two box lunches and some sodas. And then she's looking at like candy bars and she goes, so hungry. And then there's like a shot of a Milky Way dark and she goes, he might like that.
How else are we gonna know what she's thinking?
That's true. And the bad guy who's after them on the train, he kidnaps her. Well, actually maybe the abduction comes when he takes her into another train car.
She's not even on the poster, so if that's what this movie's about, then I feel cheated.
Yeah, it is him sliding down a building while breathing through his mouth.
I think he's also holding a gun, which might I add that he never really picks up a gun in this entire movie.
Yeah, and if you get a chance, listeners, to look up the poster for this movie, please do, because I'm not sure from what perspective this poster is shot. I mean, I know it's not shot. It looks like a gigantic Photoshop job.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm not sure where the perspective of the person looking at the poster is supposed to be, because it's like he's sliding down the side of a building, but there are buildings descending backwards into the sky, sort of like perpendicular to the person and looking at the poster.
Yeah, that was bad. The whole train scene was just such an awful, awful thing.
Well, I kept wondering why the bad guy, instead of just kidnapping her for 90 seconds, why didn't he just follow her back to the cabin where Taylor Lautner was? Because it was obvious he knew who she was. She had a couple meals and a Milky Way dark. I mean, it's obvious she's going back to her man. So I just found it really weird that he didn't follow her and get him that way. But instead, he like kidnaps her briefly and tries to force her to say where. I don't know. The whole thing was just, ugh.
Yeah, it didn't make any sense. Maybe he didn't think he could take both of them at the same time. Because she was, like, so dangerous looking. Well, also, I think he tied her up to, like, like a foldable TV tray. And I was like, why can't she just get up? Why can't she just move her arms and pick up that TV tray?
Her eyebrows were weighing her down.
Yeah, exactly. She just couldn't even lift her head.
So, do you want to know what my other favorite line in this movie was?
Yes.
I think that you probably laughed at this part in the theater when you saw it. There's a part where Taylor Lautner and Lily Collins are talking to the vague Eastern European bad guy over the phone, and he's threatening them. You know, he's already killed Taylor Lautner's parents. He's going to make matters worse by killing other people they know. And the way he caps this off is by saying that they'll be responsible for the death of all of their friends on Facebook.
Yeah, that, I do remember that. He was like, I will kill her parents, and then I will kill your parents. No, I did that. I will kill your Facebook friends.
Yeah.
Everyone on the Facebook.
A personal note to all my friends who keep hassling me, that's why I don't have a Facebook profile, okay? If this yeah. ever happens to me, if I ever get non-abducted, I don't want blood on my hands, okay?
Yeah, exactly. You're all liable right now.
Yep.
No, I thought that was pretty funny, you know, because they had to keep it modern. They had to keep it relevant for the kids. They had to mention Facebook at least once or twice.
You think like all the like teenagers in the audience were like, oh my god, I have Facebook friends. This could totally happen to me.
Right, yeah. That's what I kept grasping at when I was watching this movie, was like, are teenagers supposed to watch this and feel scared or think that this could be them? What if they were abducted as a child and like all this stuff? Like, are there teenage boys that are like, oh man, it would be so cool to be him? but, like, not really, right? He's kind of awful, and, like, his life sucks.
And he breathes through his mouth a lot, so he must constantly have a sore throat.
Right, yeah. He probably has asthma or, you know, some sort of sinus blockage of some kind.
Then again, abs.
Yeah, right? I'm not sure what the draw is for this movie, because, like, I love a lot of dumb teenage shit where you can just turn your brain off. This is not that. This is somewhere in between that and something way, way worse. I can't even explain.
Should we grade this?
Yeah.
It's a foregone conclusion. So, Ghostface, what grade would you give Abduction?
I would give it a D.
Oh, I really was concerned that you were going to give it an F, and I was going to have to be the one that went higher than you. Yeah. I'm actually going lower than you now. I would give it a D minus. I cannot not put this on par with I Am Number 4. I don't think it's an F movie. I think, like we talked about, Maria Bello has, you know, one or two good moments in this thing.
She's in it for 5 minutes, and she's the one that saved this from being an F. I just think that's awful.
And that's going to wrap up another episode of Scorncast. Thanks to Ghostface Milla for stopping by. Thanks to Bug for our theme music. Thanks to you for listening. And as always, you can visit PopScorn at scornpop.blogspot.com, comment on our posts, or give them a +1 if you have no comments to make. And you can email PopScorn at scornpop@gmail.com. And I think you're going to want to stay tuned after the closing credits for something really special.
Read you part of the synopsis, the storyline on IMDb for Abduction?
Yes.
It's so good. Nathan, a teen, along with his friend, Karen, finds a website that has photos of children who are missing or believed to have been abducted. This is written by a person, by the way, not like IMDb. They decide to age one of the photos and discover that it is of Nathan as a child. He contacts the person who placed the photo to find out what's going on. The person on the other end only wants to know info about Nathan, so Nathan hangs up. The person then contacts someone in Europe and shows him a photo of the one who called. Sorry. He then heads for the U.S. Nathan then wonders, is it true? Was he abducted? No question mark. He tells his quote-unquote mom, who tells him she and his quote father will tell him. But before they can, two men claiming to be cops show up wanting to talk to Nathan, and when he isn't found, they pull guns and demand Nathan be given to them. His parents fight them, but are killed. Nathan runs, but remembers that he asked Karen to come over.
That's it?
That's the storyline.